this meeting to order. Let's have the Pledge of Allegiance, please. Attention, salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. We have a roll call, Francis, please.
Commissioner Clemens?
Here.
Commissioner Cisneros?
Here.
Commissioner Chavez? Commissioner Barker?
Here.
Chairman Nord?
Here. Okay, first thing up today, we've got election of officers for this commission. We've delayed it a couple of months to see if we could get a
full house.
Full house, but we're one short, so I think, what do you think? Should we move ahead and do it?
Let's do it.
Is that okay with you?
Fine with me.
Okay, I mean, the pay is much the same, isn't it, for any of the positions?
No cola.
No cola.
Pretty lean.
Anybody want to make a motion or...
I'll make a motion to re-elect Chairman Nord as chairman.
I second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any discussion further? Al doesn't want it?
I don't want it. We didn't ask Howard if he wanted it. Howard, do you want it?
No, I didn't.
Boss here is too often lately at school.
I could probably handle another year as long as John re-ups for the next term.
Still to be determined.
Okay, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Clemens?
Yes.
Commissioner Cisneros?
Yes.
Commissioner Barker?
Yes.
Chairman Nord?
Abstain. Then for vice chair, I would nominate John Clemens.
I'll second that.
Motion and a second. Any discussion on that one?
Who was it who seconded?
Actually, they both did, but I don't know.
Simultaneously.
Yeah.
Okay, let's have a vote, please.
Chairman Nord?
Yes.
Commissioner Barker?
Yes.
Commissioner Cisneros?
Yes.
Commissioner Clemens?
And I get to abstain.
Okay, thanks for your votes there. We'll move on then. We got the consent agenda, which is the billing report for the month of August. Anything unusual there, David, that we should have looked it over? It's always interesting to see who's building what around, isn't it?
Nothing unusual. It's a healthy level of activity. You've got the, I believe, the last set of self-help homes are there under new home starts. Mm. Also, what we've been getting, three per month from Cambridge Homes has also been pretty consistent, so nothing unusual.
I had one question under additions, if I could, to the commercial property. What's actually happening with Mr. Garner's piece? Are they dividing that into two sections? The property that's at 1147 G Street?
I think that would just be an interior partition. It's not a partial split.
Okay, so it's becoming two stores, essentially?
It'd be two storefronts.
Okay.
Provided they meet building code requirements on the interior, there's no no special need.
Okay.
It's happened in other large buildings before.
Does that imply he has people to occupy that, or is this just in preparation for, or we don't know?
We don't know. It looks more like it's just to scale down the size of the store, and then it looks like it's being marketed for anybody that's interested in renting the other half.
Rent sign on there, so. Then I was looking at the value of the Long's Drugs. I'm assuming that's for the signage that probably changed to the CVS drugstore.
Yeah, the valuation shown in the building report is for the work that's being done, so that would indicate $48,000 worth of...
Remodel
work.
Okay, total.
That's not the valuation of the facility.
Okay.
And they carpeted the place.
Really?
There's carpet down. My wife said it's great. Yeah. It cuts the noise down, easier on the feet.
Hmm. It was looking pretty bad there for a while.
Yeah, I think they moved their aisles just a little bit and whatnot.
Okay.
So. Anyway, she liked it, so if she likes it, I like it. That's the rule. Okay, let's vote on that. Is there a motion to accept that?
Move to approve that.
Consent agenda, there's a motion by Sean.
Second that.
Second from Al. We have a vote, please.
Commissioner Clements?
Yes.
Commissioner Cisneros?
Yes.
Commissioner Barker?
Yes.
Chairman Nord?
Yes.
Okay, we got a public hearing number 4, annexation related to entitlements, their Blossom Trail subdivision. So we must have a new staff report, perhaps?
Chairman Nord, the applicants requested that this be removed from the agenda tonight. Staff's not recommending that it be continued to another date. When we get ready to bring it back, we'll schedule a hearing and properly notice it. That request is due to need for additional time to talk about the proposed conditions of approval and development agreement that the applicant is requesting. So they've asked that it be removed from the agenda, that it not be heard tonight, and staff's not suggesting that you schedule another time yet at this point.
Okay. Do we need to act on that, accept that at all, or we just, you pull it from the agenda, huh?
Just remove it from the agenda.
Okay. Well, that makes it easy.
I had a question related to that project. You know, in reviewing the initial plan, I saw no transit pullouts or any of that around the commercial properties. At what point in time would I recommend that or suggest that?
When we get to public hearing, it'd be inappropriate for us to talk about any modification of the project till we get to that point.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay, then under number 5, communication and staff reports, looking at compact parking stalls, just information only. David, you want to fill us in on that?
Thank you, Chairman Nord. We've received, we've reviewed several staff-level projects, site plans, where applicants have asked about use of compact parking stalls within their project. We don't have a compact parking stall standard. Our practice in the past has been provide the off-street parking required number of stalls per the ordinance. And if you have additional room on your site and you want to add compact parking stalls, you're welcome to do so. So what we've had inquiry about is meeting the parking requirement with use of compact parking stalls. And staff's done a little bit of preliminary work looking at what other communities do. There's a range of options. Specifically, we do have a project in that would like to use compact parking stalls. It's a larger project. The larger the project, the more you spread out the number of compact parking stalls, perhaps the less impact it may be. So we're asking that you direct us to initiate an ordinance amendment to review compact parking stalls. We'll come back to you with analysis of what other communities are doing and possibly some recommendations of what we think may work for Reedley.
So currently you cannot meet the required parking stalls with compact?
If the square footage of your proposed retail business says you've got to provide 10 parking stalls, we'll tell you that the ordinance says you need to provide 10 parking stalls that are 20 feet by 9 feet. If you have additional room on your site and you want to put in a compact parking stall, you're free to do so. What we're receiving inquiries for is, can I use a compact parking stall to meet a portion of my parking standard? And the answer today is no. With the changes that are coming, with air pollution, air emission monitoring, you're probably going to start to see air pollution control district preference to compact parking stalls and other things that are going to give projects a benefit for including such things. And it'd be prudent on our part to have addressed that question. If the end result is we don't like them or we don't have a large number allowed, what we need to know is what does the community want to permit. So today it's zero. If we confirm that it's zero through this process, then we'll at least be able to say, we've considered them, and here's the answer.
So a regular parking lot size is, or a parking stall size is 9 by 20?
9 by 20 for a 90-degree parking stall. Things change. They may or may not change. I think they wind up getting a little bit deeper when you go diagonally, but it's effectively giving you the same space.
And a compact could be?
standard compact parking stall, Rob, is 17 by?
17 by ranges from 7.5 up to 8, 8.5. But the most common size you see is 7, 7.5 by 17.
Are we looking at a possible ratio of compact to non-compact, or is it?
It'd be a percentage. Rob's been looking into it already, and you have, it seems to be a range of 10 to 40%, most common being 30%. Of the total.
Being compact.
Being compact.
Hmm. What's your car, John? Should have asked about a bus.
Yeah, I could tell you how wide a bus is, 96 and inches wide and 40 feet long. Yeah. I don't know. You know, I have two Chevy Avalanches, so there's nothing compact at my house other than the bike you see parked outside there. And I went to Pacifica this weekend, and there was a brand new Walgreens on the corner there, and there was no off-street parking. It was all along the curb, but it was diagonal in, and I don't think they had anything but compact spots. So I took the last one, and I parked my Avalanche in that spot. Now, I hung out into the street, mind you, but... I didn't have another choice unless I wanted to park at Safeway a half a block away and walk over there. And if that was the case, I would have shopped there. You know, it was convenient. So I don't know. It was a two-lane street that is divided right up the middle by Highway 1. It's very congested right there. Tough backing out of that spot. I thought, you know, in this community, we probably never would have allowed that to go there. That would have made a better parking lot instead of a Walgreens. But, just high traffic density right there. Gridlock situation at some parts of the day when
they're
I was...
They're counting on the drive-through pharmacy to get them by.
And, you know, they did have that. And, in fact, I used that when I exited. I went around the back of the building, which had an alleyway, and I went against the sign that said do not enter for the drive-through to get back around the block in the direction I wanted to go. Because the other option would have been to go 2 miles down and cross over the freeway and come back up. So I don't know. We got off track here, but I just struggle with compact spots because I typically do park my big truck. And, you know, in this part of the country, people drive lots of big trucks. But I know the need comes, you know, with the Bay Area, there's lots of small cars.
Yeah. Okay.
It'd be interesting to look at.
Yeah, we'll hear more about that.
And that is what we're asking, that you direct us to come back with information related to that. If you're not ready to make any recommendations or think things should stay the way they are, then that's what we'll push forward to.
Do we want a formal motion to do that?
Please.
Okay, is there somebody who will make a motion then to direct staff to research?
I'd move that we explore the options and the possibilities without making a decision at this point.
Okay, is there a second to that?
Could I amend that?
Sure.
Also, looking at any possible penalty or, as you were saying, your Avalanche was sticking out in the street. Mm-hmm. And if there is if the other communities have some kind of ticketing processes, if you're, like I drive my Dodge, E10, and it's going to stick out in the street in a compact. So any penalties or...
Or limitations on the actual width of the curb-to-curb thing would probably come into play, too. Okay, so we're simply going to include that in the research. Which
That's great.
Okay, is there a second to the motion then, or was that a second?
That would be a second with it.
Okay. Any further discussion? Is that adequate?
That's adequate.
Okay, call for the vote then, please.
Commissioner Clements?
Yes.
Commissioner Barker?
Yes.
Commissioner Cisneros?
Yes.
Chairman Nord?
Yes. Okay, and then in relation to rear yard setbacks, we've got looking at a possible ordinance amendment there, information only today.
This is similar to the request for compact parking stalls, asking you to direct us to explore reviewing the rear yard setback for single-family residential, primarily in the Reedley-specific plan area. What we're getting is property owners in the newer subdivisions saying that they'd like to be able to put patio in their backyard. The lots are a little bit smaller in the Reedley specific plan area. We've done some things to work towards that effort, and their opinion is that you overlooked the fact that you made our lot smaller. We don't have enough room in the backyard to build a standard size patio without going into the what is now a 10-foot rear yard. So they're asking if that could be reviewed and possibly reduced. They're looking for variances to encroach into the rear yard or exceptions to encroach into the rear yard. And from staff's perspective, it would be more appropriate to look at, do you want to modify the standard for the rear yard for districts or not? It shouldn't be on a case-by-case basis. If we've overlooked the rear yard requirement or modifying the rear yard when we adopted the Reedley specific plan, then let's revisit that and see if it should be modified.
So you're saying that they want to put in a patio, but it would take up too much of their green space that they're required to have a certain percentage of in the yard?
No, the rear yard setback is 10 feet.
Okay.
In the R1 specific plan areas.
Okay.
And what they're saying is we've got more compact lots.
Okay.
In the older areas where you have 7, 8, 9, 10,000 square foot lots.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, for a resident to have a standard size shade structure in their backyard,
They
can't be 10 feet off the rear yard line.
Got it.
There's no room to do that. They need to be closer to the rear yard line, the rear property line, to be able to make it fit at all.
This would be where they were sharing a common fence with a neighbor, or?
There would most likely be somebody on the other side of the fence. The setbacks in the Reedley specific plan area for R1 are down to 10 feet on the front yard, 10 feet on the rear yard, and 5 feet on the side yards. Standard R16 is 20-foot front yard, 10-foot rear yard, 5-foot side yards. What they're saying is we've gotten smaller. Should we not have looked at reducing the rear yard so that you can have a larger backyard or utilize a larger backyard? If the yard got smaller, do you need to reduce the restrictions so that you could utilize more of the smaller yard? Would be the logic.
So they're suggesting a 5-foot setback?
5 foot is what's been thrown out.
Might as well share your barbecue too.
Put a gate.
Put it on the fence line.
Common table.
Common table, right.
Turn
right.
The spit. Baste it on their side and baste it on this side.
Some of them probably rather have a bigger patio than yard in the back, I guess.
I would if I had a choice.
Yeah, a lot less maintenance and mow the lawn.
To mow the patio, right? Is that what you're saying?
No, you have more shade, more living, or I don't know.
My only concern there would be what kind of structure they would be building within that setback. If they're only 5 feet from their neighbor, I've seen some pretty strange looking patios that are elevated, looking over into the neighbor's yard. So,
well, they'd still have to get it done properly. They'd still have to get the permit to do it. And the other side of this is too is people, if you don't allow them to do it legally, in many cases they'll do it illegally, and then where are you?
My side of town.
See, we do create some problems for ourselves when we create smaller lots.
Yeah.
Parking issues on the street. Okay.
Okay, so we're looking for direction for staff. Are we comfortable, in essence, directing them to do some research on that and come with a proposed ordinance amendment if they see that as the best way to go?
And maybe with the investigation or the little research as to whether maybe we shouldn't look at increasing those sizes if unless we're going to be penalized for our brilliance at developing that specific plan.
Decreasing the lot size, you
mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, go back and let's go back. If we're going to go to that point of looking at the setbacks, let's just do a little examination of the cause and effect.
Maybe with different scenarios, with different setbacks, mm-hmm. At 15 feet or 12 feet or...
Are any of those kind of lots in an area where they would all have alleys? Or is that, you're saying within the specific plan?
Well, the requests are coming from the specific plan area. So, would you like us to look at all areas? Obviously, we'll make comparisons between the standard older developed part of the community and what's happening in the specific plan areas. And from there, I think if you keep your direction broad enough, just have us analyze mm-hmm. setbacks. You may be wanting to take action on both the existing or older areas and the specific plan areas, either making them the same or different, confirming that you want things the way they are, or saying that whatever it is you're looking to change in the specific plan area, you're suggesting the same change in the older areas. We don't build alleys anymore. We avoid building new alleys, so the request and the direction I was looking for initially was within the Reedley specific plan area. But I think it's fair to analyze all areas.
Well, you answered my question there when you say we don't include alleys, there's no new alleys there, because I was saying if you had an alley, mm-hmm. it may make more sense to cut down your setback requirement because you don't pull the people so
right.
quite so close together. If I got just a one by or a 3/4 by 12 between me and the neighbor already, mm-hmm. You're getting two conversations going, you can almost talk to each other.
Pretty much.
Well, 5 feet is less than between Al and I.
Perhaps examining the setbacks that exist within the various subdivisions that have occurred in the specific plan. I mean, are there differences between the Horton and the Lanier and the Generation Homes? I'd be curious. Did we put in different size lots in those different ones? I know there are, but let's just take a closer view at it.
I'd be okay with
that. Yeah, wait till we get in these big lots.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And definitely it's different in a PUD that's going to be coming up there.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
As far as the setback in the...
Well, we have a common bathroom.
Excuse me.
Okay, are we ready for a motion on that? I think we're hearing positive on that. We just wanted to expand it to a look at what exists in the various subdivisions and how that's meeting the needs, I would imagine. And so we can look at the possibility of altering this ordinance. Somebody want to make that into a motion?
I'll move.
Okay. Move that we take a look at the setback requirements.
Review rear yard setback areas and residential areas. If we could make it as much an apple-to-apple comparison in the general plan.
We'll look at the non-specific plan areas and the specific plan areas side by side. And then also, as was suggested, look at the individual projects within the really specific plan area and see if there's a difference in the lot sizes and see what the end result of that is, if there are differences in the lot sizes. It's a small enough number of subdivisions that we could really look at them in pretty close detail.
Okay, is there a second on that?
Yeah, I'll second that.
Oh, you got it. Okay, John, are you hearing enough of this? You can vote?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll call for the vote then, please.
Commissioner Barker?
Yes.
Commissioner Cisneros?
Yes.
Commissioner Clements?
Yes.
Chairman Nord?
Yes. Okay, that takes care of the business of the meeting. Any Planning Commission members' reports? David, could you maybe update us? We looked last time at suggesting that the council look at a 7-member deal here. What happens on that?
I shared that request with the city manager, and he is going to forward that to the city council and see what their direction is.
Okay.
Somewhat agreeable that it would could be beneficial to expand to 7. To confirm your direction, you were not set on 7 or 9, just an increase.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I would probably look at 7 being the best. I don't see a solid reason to move to as many as 9, that it might help us to move to 7.
City manager's indicated that he'll forward that to the city council. Yeah.
You know, there's one other question. I was talking with someone today about homes and what's the going over the other side of town, north of town, that last one to kind of be developed out there.
Hortons?
Yeah. Hortons. What's the size of the driveways on there? Because you know what, I think we've seen driveways now that shrunk and cars that grew, and that maybe goes along with some of the setback issue, but we, mm-hmm. is there a required width on driveways when you have a two-car garage, for example? I mean,
in the Reedley specific plan area, there's very clear limitations on maximum driveway width as a percentage of the lot,
right.
And there's also a prohibition of 3-car garages facing the street.
Mm.
What we intend to do with the general plan update is reevaluate some of that language and see what we can do and explore from other communities regarding 3-car garages. There seems to be a demand for 3-car garages in the really specific plan area. They're not as easily permitted. So what are the alternatives to get the same result? You've got projects you might have seen in other communities where the garage has a side entrance instead of facing the street. Now, one of the biggest points when going through the really specific plan, we were calling them snout houses that have 3-car garages, and that's the closest point to the street. So that's the dominant feature from the street, is a 3-car garage, blank wall, and the entrance to the house is way in the back. Can you do something architecturally where you're not looking at a 3-car garage, three doors, but you've got architectural features of a side of a structure that match the house with entrance on the side? So there's more that we can look at and possibly achieve the same goals we had.
Well, I was going to say, a couple of those models at D.R. Horton, in fact, one of the model houses, had a 2-car wide, but the one side was double deep, so you could literally put almost 3 cars in there.
Staff-wise, we think we need to find as many acceptable alternatives to providing additional garage space rather than work from a position of being more restrictive. I think the really specific plans, it's clearly restrictive regarding 3-car garages, and based on the number of vehicles we tend to have per household in Reedley, we need to do something to make sure that 3-car garages are an alternative that's not a problem for a developer. There need to be enough options for them to have one that fits what they want to build to be able to provide 3-car garages instead of just one way to do it.
Well, I'm thinking even of double-car garages now. It appears to me, and I think we've got some over in our neighborhood, that if you've got 2 big SUVs, you may get 2 there, but with a couple inches between them, you'll never get out of your car.
Yeah.
So I think even that probably needs to be looked at, too, because I think they shrunk those garages to meet the percentage requirements, which I like the percentage requirement because it does look more like a home in a community rather than just garage doors. But as we, especially as we're looking at smaller lots and people are requesting smaller lots, I think it's a phenomenon that we're going to have to...
And we're looking at more compact car spaces in our parking lots, and we're building 3-car garages. Is that what signal are we sending?
Yeah, if you're driving 2 Volkswagen Bugs, you might make it, but most families have something larger and perhaps something smaller, too. But
I think things will change in the next few decades. They're not going to change tomorrow.
No.
They are.
So we need to be able to function today, but be efficient tomorrow. One of the features in the Reedley specific plan that everybody loved when we went through the adopting the plan was the detached setback garage, and obviously that looks great, and everybody's nostalgic about it, but it's not something that anybody builds today. It's just not cost-effective. We can barely afford to build houses as conventionally as possible. Nobody's choosing to build a detached garage setback at the back of a lot. It's just not practical.
Off the alley.
We don't have alleys, so.
Yeah, like the ones we saw in Sioux Sun City.
We need to be practical and have as many alternatives as possible so that we can get a variety of housing types that achieve all the goals that we have. So we'll be open-minded when we get through the general plan update, pulling over the really specific plan standards, but also being critical of them and seeing what we need to add to be as flexible as possible to meet all the goals we have.
Okay. Dan Burden was here. I hope it was valuable for staff to see him. I sat through the afternoon session. He's a real proponent of roundabouts and mini circles. Now I know the difference between a mini circle and a roundabout.
Now, mini circles are like the small ones you see in areas of Sacramento downtown that
wait a minute. A mini circle can be larger than a roundabout. The roundabout has a division as you approach. It has a division, an island that focuses traffic. A circle does not.
Oh.
So a mini circle could be, in fact, larger than a roundabout. So at least that was the definition, I think, roughly.
I think it was a channelized approach. Yeah. Controlled approach coming into the traffic
and
circle.
He claims, and he's got the numbers and the, I imagine, the studies to show that you can go from a five-lane street to each direction with a turning lane to a two-lane street and handle similar numbers of traffic. So you create a room for parking lanes or bike lanes or whatever you want to do up with the rest of it. And, of course, one sitting by itself doesn't necessarily accomplish the traffic calming. But if you can do a series of those or handle it in the right ways, it will work. So,
what is the timeline for the roundabout at Buttonwillow and Tiny Bay?
It's just getting through its environmental review phase. There's an environmental document out for comment. I'm not certain of the closing date. Following that, that environmental document will go to the City Council for adoption. And then I believe they're near ready with construction level drawings that they can go out to bid for construction.
I did ask him too what the learning curve is on a traffic circle. How long does it take people to learn? He said, I think he said 90% of the people learn in the construction phase.
Slower.
The 10% you have to worry about.
Yeah, it's 10%. Learn.
Does that include the uninsured motorists?
Well, it was interesting too. He said that I think he believed he used the number 70% of the people are skeptical of the idea of a circle because they simply haven't dealt with them. But 6 weeks after it's activated, it's flipped. 70% of the people like it. 30% of the people are still skeptical. So I think we've got a good test location out there where we're doing it. One of the interesting things I thought was he talked, without talking about our area over here in the Spaghetti Bowl specifically, he did have comments on areas where you did have train tracks going through.
Yeah.
And they work just as well there. He says, What happens is when the train goes through, everything stops.
Yeah.
But then when the train's gone, everything can start to move as opposed to simply
waiting for all the signals to
waiting for the signals to catch
back.
You up. That sounds really good. Now we got students,
buses, high school, college.
After 5 o'clock.
So I'm glad you're trying the Buttonwillow and the Danielville one first, just to kind of get us over
that'd
the.
That'd be a good test area.
But
I don't know about this in a way. You know, it's,
but he did have reports from. He's been all over the world, literally, with this, and to show that it affects the retail environment, the socialization that goes along with people on foot and bikes and all that kind of, and simply slowing traffic. So there are some really good things. I'm kind of excited about seeing it coming. I hope I get to see more than the Buttonwillow and Dinuba in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Now you also talked about walkability.
We got a little bit more of that staff started with them as early as 7:30 in the morning, actually out on the street watching the traffic. Then we had an hour and a half long session where we talked about different things we could do in that area. But it really did focus a lot on traffic circles, and that covered most of his discussion in the afternoon. Really sounds like what he's saying is you need to deal with the traffic intersections and the corridor, and use of traffic signals results in a more pedestrian-friendly environment. When you're reducing the corridor width, when you're reducing the amount of time it takes to cross any segment of a street, you've created a more walkable situation, a more aesthetically pleasing situation. But it did sound an awful lot like a pitch for roundabouts, which we're open-minded to. We're just not ready to go and plop them throughout a whole corridor.
Well, the roundabouts do invite more a walk-friendly environment because you've got narrower lanes, for example. You bring out the curbs, so you're directing traffic, and so the pedestrian goes out to the safe harbor island in the middle if they need to, and of course then crosses the other lane as they need to. So it does do some things for the walkability of an area.
Wow. You tend to have crossings at intersections, and when you get to a heavy traffic intersection, you've had to do things to deal with the volume of traffic, additional turn lanes and additional turn pockets and channels, where the corridor might be four lanes wide. When you get to the intersection, it might be six lanes wide because you've got additional turn pockets. So you've actually widened the space that a pedestrian needs to cross in a specified amount of time. So you're really uncomfortable when you're running across, trying to run across six lanes of traffic when one leg's going, one leg's not. Reducing the amount of space you've got to cross and reducing the speed that the vehicles are traveling as you're crossing it results in a more pedestrian-friendly environment. The crossing point for the traffic signal isn't at the widest point of the traffic signal. It's actually a minimum of, I think it's a full car length back before you enter the circle where you're asking the pedestrians to cross or providing the crossing, which further helps to slow down the vehicles to be mindful of pedestrians.
And you can make a circle. It does not have to be all single lane, for example. It can be two lanes for part of it if you've got a known heavier traffic movement. So there's different ways to design these things that make them more usable.
How interesting.
Yeah.
Now initially this circle is going to be one lane, two lane?
One lane, one I lane. Believe.
It's going to be interesting.
Big enough for semis.
That's a good point about that location. We're gonna know that you can handle truck traffic because that's a very high truck traffic intersection.
Yeah. Where was that one, David? That was in a place I was gonna remember where they did a real flat circle. Remember you showed the one where they really did not
where they
make any.
Actually drive straight across it.
They potentially you could go straight.
You said that one was in Arizona.
Mm. Yeah, because I'd been to that little town somewhere outside of Colorado Springs or something. Manitou Springs. Mm. I think it's Manitou Springs. They actually did a circle, and it's a very small town. But there was, you know, it was humped a little bit, but there was no curb. So theoretically, if somebody got, you know, nothing would be there to bump into, so to speak, still directed your traffic. But if you got somebody that cut off a corner,
it wasn't a big deal.
It was not a big deal. And I think they did it specifically for that reason because they knew they'd have trucks through that area and that. So, okay, anything else going on out there, David? I noticed the, what is it called, Fresh?
Fresh and Easy is under construction.
Awesome.
Cool.
Subway's moved over there too?
Subway is doing tenant improvements in what we'll call the Radio Shack building. The building that's already constructed and occupied by Radio Shack. Subway is doing tenant improvements on the western end. So there's still additional vacant space in the center of that building for either one or two tenants. The building that's under construction is solely for Fresh and Easy's use. Hmm.
They've lifted their moratorium on opening. Last I had read that they more or less decided not to.
Yeah, that was not that long ago.
My understanding was that they were in a pause. pause till they thought the economy was better. Obviously felt comfortable moving forward building the Reedley store, and my understanding is that they're going to be opening the Fresno and Clovis stores also. I'll try to get...
Time frame as to when...
The Reedley store should be completed with construction hopefully by January or so. I don't have an opening date yet. They're kind of difficult to get a hold of. But whatever we find out, we'll relay on to you. But they're at the point they had a building permit that was ready to go in City Hall for several months that required a substantial payment for pay their development impact fees, pay their building permit fees, that they waited until they were ready to move forward. So I think that's a good sign that they're committed to getting the store completed and open.
I think there was some kind of, I don't know if the right term is controversy, about a lot change map or some kind of change that needed to be filed.
On this project?
On, it may have been the Radio Shack store that I'm talking about, but that area over there. We were concerned that they wanted to do some kind of boundary change, but we wanted to make sure it was filed before we approved it.
They did a parcel subdivision. They did a parcel map, creating separate parcels.
Okay.
And that's been completed. That was completed before the site plan was approved. So there's no other entitlement process that they need to go through to finish their store. They just need to finish construction, meet building code requirements, and get a business license.
And what size is this?
I want to say 13,000 square feet.
Yeah, they're traditionally not big. I've been in a couple of them.
Southern California?
I was in one in Phoenix. It was in a strip center, and it looked like about this size. They're kind of a mini Whole Foods kind of operation, from what I remember there, anyway.
Kind of like on Trader Joe type?
Yeah, healthy stuff, fresh stuff.
Pre-made stuff?
Some of that, I guess. Reedley College, you know, I thought it was good that we had somebody from Reedley College here when Dan Burton was here. They're building dorms, and they don't have to work with the city in relation to all the codes and stuff, do they, or do they?
They're governed by the state,
right?
As is the school district.
Right.
They tend to share plans with us and let us comment, but they're not held to city standards.
Right. So they're going to they're building those new dorms. The old one's going to be pulled down?
I believe so.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Parking lot kind of thing, then, maybe?
They've talked about a parking lot in the location where the existing dorms are, but we haven't seen anything final.
The biggest moneymaker in school now is parking lots.
Yeah, because there's some kids that buy parking permits and it's all full, and they have to go park out in the street.
Hmm. Fresno State's $167 a semester to park.
I think I heard Reedley College is up at 6,600 students, which is probably the biggest, at least the person told me that was saying it's probably
highest
the biggest.
Enrollment. Now, is that including the other centers or just Reedley College?
Oh, I got the idea that it was Reedley College.
Mm-hmm. That would be Reedley College. I've heard, I hadn't heard the number for a while, but I knew it was well over 5,000 for quite a while.
It's the best kept secret in education around, I'll tell you. It's a great school.
Yeah, they offer a lot of good things. Well, did you come out with, and I didn't know the lady that was here from Reedley College, but did you come out with some good ideas from Dan in relation to traffic calming? I'll use the word calming because that's kind of the buzzword, or at least a word I picked up.
Some of their suggestions related to Reedley College were considering staggering the start times for classes, which would obviously have an impact on the college. There might be costs associated with that. If that's something the college wanted to entertain, they could have fewer students showing up right at the 8 o'clock hour. Hmm. And that doesn't require adding any new infrastructure. That's just changing a schedule. Just conceptually talked about anything you could do to provide connectivity on the campus from one parking lot to the other. Additional parking on campus, but also internal circulation between those parking areas to provide an opportunity to get off of Manning Avenue before you get to that intersection of Reed and Manning. Because you've got three points where you got cars stacking up, and if you could get them off the street before they get to the other two points, you don't need to put additional improvements in there. So they had some good ideas. When they're talking about radical changes with roundabouts, whether at that location or elsewhere, there's generally, when you've got an existing large corridor, you've got right-of-way that doesn't need to be in travel lanes anymore, and you could start talking about providing additional parking. So maybe you can get some additional parking on the street. That means there's not as much that you need to create on the campus. But they didn't do that in great detail where they're analyzing where it can actually work. And we haven't sat down with the college to see if there's anything they're open to. All of this was initiated by the three large projects that the city's entertaining, being the Frankwood Avenue Improvement Project, Reed Avenue Improvement Project, and Manning Avenue Bridge. And Dan being available from the local government commission, we just wanted to talk to somebody who's recognized as an expert on walkability as we're going through those projects. What can we do, if anything, to make sure we get the best project for the community regarding walkability and pedestrian safety? And they'll be available to review any plans we might put together, just on a not a peer review type level, but just let them take a look at it and give us some comments back.
Yeah, with all the satellite pictures and whatnot, all you said, if you've got an intersection you want us to look at,
cool,
we can do it without, you know, traveling even. So
that's neat.
That's kind of cool.
And there's a lot of students that park across the street, the Riverwalk parking lot there. They have posted signs for college students not to park there, but they park there.
There's a security guy there in the morning. Sits in the back of his pickup truck and he's watching.
Park there and walk to the shopping, and then they walk to school. You can't tell.
In the shopping center?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then even the First Baptist Church allows them to park over there, you know.
Yeah.
As they're having a funeral or something. It's a parking problem there, because
every school develops that.
Yeah.
The college has...
That you brought up was the marking of, I guess it's considered Manning, around that corner. You showed cars that were parked, you know, really with big spaces between, and simply marking.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're not marked.
But at least grab a few spaces by
painting the spots.
Yeah, painting the spots.
Cheryl's ready to go. We better go.
We better get going.
See you, Cheryl.
The college has an agreement with the Baptist Church regarding sharing their parking lot. Mm-hmm. They've expressed that they have an interest in expanding their church in the future. They don't have all the space they would need to expand their church and provide what would be the standard parking. So they've talked to the city about whether or not they could have a shared parking agreement and satisfy some of their parking load on the college campus. And they went in and put in some the crossing improvements, and shared parking is a good thing. The church doesn't need parking at the same time as the college, and vice versa. So shared parking is a good thing.
Something I picked up on Dan's, he said if a pedestrian is asked to walk more than about 150 feet, they traditionally will jaywalk instead of going to the legal crossing.
Yeah.
Which is true. I'm probably the same way. So.
I don't. I take the long way around. I like to walk.
That's why your knees wore out.
You lie.
That's why your knees wore out.
Okay, anything else for the good of the cause? Okay, we'll adjourn the meeting then.